Next to last meeting of Subcommittee on Human Services, Joint Committee on Ways and Means. We will meet again tomorrow. I believe we'll probably wrap everything up tomorrow. We are going to have a lot of work sessions today, and we have a work session and at least one public hearing today also. I would like to get through as many, if not all, of the work sessions quickly today. My desire is that we all sit down and be quiet and vote. Now you could use another stronger word in there, but I won't. Okay? We got a lot of work to do. These have all been vetted. We've looked at these a lot before, and it's pretty late to changing at this point. Let's go for the good, not the perfect, and see how far we get today. So, with that said, Madam Co-Chair, do you have any comments?
No, let's get to business.
All right, and we're going to follow this right through here. So I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 5026. Lori Beyer.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, so over the last week or so, we've been working on the Department of Human Services budget, and you took action and heard recommendations on all components of the budget. So before you today, there is a packet in OLIS. This is for action on the final budget collectively. I did what you have in OLIS today that wasn't there yesterday. There is the actual dash one amendment to the bill, which incorporates all the budget changes discussed previously. I also have a change to make in the recommendations in that memo for you today. On the first page of the memo, there's a table that shows the agency-wide budget. And one of the attachments in that is a document that has a couple of budget notes. There are two budget notes. The first one has to do with a budget note on sustainability for the Aging and People with Disabilities and Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities programs. This has to do with the agency looking at caseload and trying to come back with some ideas for how to manage caseload growth and cost. There's a second budget note on provider rates. We've been asked to hold off on adopting that language. There's been a request to do some additional work on that from your Joint Ways and Means co-chairs, so we won't be taking action on that budget note today, but we will work on that language and probably have something for the end of session bill. So I wanted to clarify that there is a change to what you see in the memo before you today. Unless you have, and so what else is in the packet is final action on the key performance measures. You saw those previously. So unless you have specific questions about anything that you've approved so far in the budget, I think you can go ahead and take final action on the budget. There's a series of motions in the memo, and we'll need to make sure on the budget note motion that we exclude that provider rate note.
Are you ready for a motion?
I am.
I move the LFO recommendation for DHS and House Bill 5026.
It has been moved that we accept the LFO recommendation for DHS and House Bill 5026. Any discussion or objections? Seeing none, so moved.
I move the LFO recommendation on the agency's key performance measures.
Do we move that we accept the LFO recommendation on the agency's key performance measures? Any discussion? Seeing none, no objections, so moved.
I move the LFO recommendation on budget notes, including the comment from the LFO analyst just a moment ago. I move that recommendation on budget notes and certain budget report language to House Bill 5026.
It has been moved that we accept the LFO recommendation on budget notes and certain budget report language to House Bill 5026. Seeing no objections, so moved.
I move to adopt the dash one amendment to House Bill 5026.
Is moved we accept the and adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 5026. No objections, so moved.
I move House Bill 5026 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Is moved that we move the House Bill 5026 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? Seeing none, so moved. We all go home now.
I'll leave some carriers for that bill. It will have a long pony.
And probably a dog. So who, Nancy, do you want to carry it in full?
I guess that would be me.
Okay. And
I like reading fast. It's all right.
As Senator Winters and I will probably carry it in on the floor. Do you want to be involved?
No, sir.
I don't blame you.
You want to be co-carriers?
I'll be co-carrier. It would be co-carrier. She's very involved in this budget. I think it's worthwhile. And on the floor?
Who can I corral into?
Mm-hmm. Explain this one to everybody.
Well, my name has to go down at least.
Okay. So that should get us started. So we're going to move to 774. Let me find my thing here. course.
Morning, Jim.
Opening a work session on Senate Bill 774. Kim.
Mr. Kocher, I think we have a public hearing.
I know. I think we wanted to do that last.
Public hearing, possible work session.
I'm sorry.
Sorry. We just have one person.
Let me open this back up again. We're going to do a public hearing and possible work session. Got ahead of myself. Sorry. Kim?
Chair Bates, members of the committee, Senate Bill 774 directs the Home Care Commission to adopt a statewide plan to address increasing participation in the home care registry, the increasing number of home care workers, and the continuing creation of the career ladder to help home care workers become more skilled and gain certification. The bill encourages an implementation of a single online application for all home care workers to apply. And the bill requires the judge to report back to an interim committee of the legislature. It comes to you from the Senate Committee on Human Services and Early Childhood.
Thank you, Kim. We have one person signed up on this, Melissa Unger. Remember, I have a chicken that I can get out.
A chicken?
You don't know about the chicken, do you?
I didn't know about the chicken.
Eric?
I'll get chicken.
Bates, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today. I will make it quick. For the record, my name is Melissa Unger, and I'm the political director of SEIU Local 503. So thank you for hearing Senate Bill 774. The goal of this bill is really to create a plan about recruiting and training home care workers and making the process for them to develop their skills and become home care workers easier. With the implementation of the Fair Labor Standards Act for home care workers and personal support workers, it's expected that we'll need thousands of additional workers because of caps that we have to put on the hours that home care workers can work. And right now we're already facing a shortage for personal support workers. Right now, we only have 59 personal support workers available for work on the registry. And yet, that's the challenge now, but the real challenges are yet to come. Right now, there are over 645,000 Oregonians over the age of 65. By 2040, that will be 1.1 million Oregonians. And we need to start to make sure there's a trained workforce to do this important work for them. The goal of the plan that the bill has is to find and recruit through outreach and marketing to recruit home care workers, and then to also take steps to make sure that they are available for work on the registry. They want to continue to find ways to create a career ladder and to encourage home care workers to go through trainings. Right now, trainings exist, but many workers don't take the step to take those trainings to become exceptional and enhanced workers, and then also to make sure that orientations are available throughout the state. And then there's $1 million set aside to create the plan and then start to implement this plan, and the Home Care Commission will have to come back and report back in September on their progress. The other piece of this bill that is really important is to note is that Oregon has over 20,000 home care workers that do work through Medicaid. And right now, you can't apply to be a home care worker online. There's no single application to be a home care worker or a personal support worker. And there's different tracking mechanisms for different types of providers, which makes it very difficult for workers who want to do both types of work. And so that's one thing this bill is meant to do, is to help streamline that work. Bobby Soten, who is a home care worker who testified on this in the policy committee, was saying that it's really difficult to be able to care for both people with developmental disabilities and people with seniors through the current system and to get approved for both. The Dash A4 amendments, I just want to note them, are the ones that they kind of add a list of making sure that people can continue to do orientations throughout the entire state and that that's available to folks and that would be included in the plan. It reduces the amount allocated for the plan, and it also adjusts the report back to make sure it's not before your next, your actual legislative days. So that's what the Dash A4 amendments do. Thank you very much.
You got 10 seconds left.
Well, I was just going to ask if there was any questions.
No. And we've got a job for you in the Senate. You can read bills, okay?
Any other questions?
Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So 59 in the whole state on the list now?
So there's lots of people. co-chairs and Representative Boone, there's lots of people who like are like work up, their information is on the registry, but people who actually say yes, I'm available for work. Yeah, there's only 59 for personal support workers in the state right now. It's a and with the increasing caseload as we've seen through this budget process, it's just an ongoing challenge for people with developmental disabilities to get matched with their a home care worker that can meet their needs.
So follow up. And where are they located?
The 59. I can get you that information, but there's like
I'm curious.
Yeah, there's some in each kind of there's some in different counties, but there's just a limited amount in each county, and clearly in rural areas we face an even harder challenge than we do in metropolitan areas.
Okay, thank you.
Quick question, Melissa, is 59? Is that a result of individuals not knowing about the registry? Is that more of an issue or? They don't want to take the time and energy and effort to become a part of the registry.
Co-chairs and Senator Winters, there's a couple of different reasons. One, I think it's a piece about once you get to go do work for a consumer that you don't go through and continue to update your information and make sure you're available for work because you may not be available for work. And so, but then two, there is this challenge of people, unless they come into the system with a consumer, don't necessarily see this as a way to go find work. So it's not like people go and say, oh, I'm going to sign up for the registry and then maybe get matched with a consumer. Instead, you really come into the system with a consumer, you sign up for the registry because you're supposed to, but then you don't have a lot of people looking for consumers through the registry because it's just the information about how to do that is really not out there very far, and I think that's a big part of the goal of this bill.
Further questions? Seeing none, we'll close a public hearing on Senate Bill 774. I will open a work session on 774.
Chair Bates, as Melissa mentioned, there is a -A4 amendment. You should have that and the staff measure summary and the fiscal impact statement with your memo on OLIS. The -A4 appropriates $1 million in general fund to the Department of Human Services in order to start this statewide plan and do work on the online registry. And it changes the reporting from September 16th, 2015 to November 16th, 2015 to coincide with legislative days. And you should have the fiscal impact with you. And while the bill contains a specific general fund appropriation, how that money will be spent will depend in part on the statewide design plan recommendations, which are unknown at this time. And that is the -A4 amendment.
Thank you, Kim.
Mr. Chair, I move the -A4 amendment into Senate Bill 774.
Well, it has been moved that we accept the -A4 amendment of Senate Bill 774. Any objections? Seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chair, would you like a motion?
Final motion.
I move Senate Bill 774 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended.
It has been moved that we accept Senate Bill 774 and move it to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended. Objections? None. Seeing none. Well, we need carriers now. This is a workforce issue, and it's for home care workers. Do you have somebody who would like to carry it in the full Ways and Means?
I'll take it.
Take it. Mm-hmm. I'll take it in the Senate floor.
And in the House, Representative Kenny Gallier, please.
Okay. Sure. Fine. Well, I'll close work session 774 if I haven't done it already. We're going to move past 3396. We'll be talking about it at the end of this morning, and we may have to hold some of it over tomorrow, depending on how long the public testimony takes. And we're going to go to a work session on Senate Bill 841.
Okay, Senate Bill 841 comes to you from the Senate Committee on Health Care. It requires health plans to reimburse the cost of prescription drugs dispensed in accordance with the plan synchronization policy. It prorates the copayment or adjusts the copayment using a method approved by the Department of Consumer Service, Consumer and Business Services for drugs dispensed in a less than 30-day supply. And it reimbursed fully the dispensing fee for partially filled or refilled prescription drugs. And there is a -8A8 amendment, and you should have that along with the staff measure summary and the fiscal impact statement on your attached to your memo on OLIS. The -A8 amendment just adds limitation language for PEB and OEB, allocating 631 $205, $44 other funds to PEB, and $219, $256 other funds to OEP.
Just for a reminder what this bill does, it's a synchronization bill. For those of you who might have more than one prescription that you have to take and enjoy going to the pharmacy four or five times a month, this is not your bill. For those of you who might want to go once a month and get it all at one time and not have to skip pills and skip your medications and end up in the hospital because you missed your bills, this is a good bill, okay? And while there is a cost to it, what we didn't and we can't calculate into it is costs that are not apparent because they're avoided costs. Hospitalizations, ER visits, extra visits to the doctor trying to get things straightened around. So this is a good bill, we believe. It's a consensus bill now with the insurers, so we should be able to move this forward. So,
would you like a motion?
I sure would.
Mr. Chair, I move the -A8 amendment into Senate Bill 841.
It has been moved that we accept the -A8 amendments to Senate Bill 841. Any objections? Seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 841 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended.
It has been moved we move the Senate Bill 841 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended. Any objections? Seeing none, so moved. Again, we will need carriers.
The chief sponsors are Bates, Steiner, Hayward, and Cruz.
Steiner's on.
I'd be happy to take it, Mr. Chair, if you want me to.
I would be great to leave. Please, let me do that. How about you? It's a great bill. Do you want to take it to the floor, too?
Be happy to, unless you want to.
Yeah. It's really a bill we worked on for two sessions, and yeah. I'm glad to see it going through, and I just want to make sure we get it out there.
It's really important. So, yep. Sure, I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. We have somebody in the House, too?
Are you aware of a representative who has been closely aligned with this in the House, who understands it in case
Who's
there's questions?
Who's your oldest representative that have the most prescriptions?
Shall Representative Greenlick?
Yes. That's a great idea.
I will ask if he's willing.
That would be great.
If he's not, I'll be happy to carry.
Did I close the work session? I think I did, didn't I?
Maybe we should do it now.
I'll close the work session on 841 if I haven't done it before. Eric, you can correct me if I'm wrong. We'll open a work session on 895 relating to child immunizations. Kim.
Chair Bates, members of the committee, Senate Bill 895 requires schools and children facilities to report annually to the Oregon Health Authority on the number of children served by the school or facility who are in attendance conditionally because of an incomplete immunization schedule. The bill also requires local health departments to make available data on immunization rate by disease of children in the area. OHA is required to help compile this data if requested. Schools and children facilities are in turn required to make this information available to parents. It comes to you from the Senate Committee on Education, and you should have the original staff measure summary, the fiscal impact statement attached to this memo on OLIS, and the fiscal impact is minimal.
Motion? Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 895 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Mathis has moved Senate Bill 895 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any objections?
I'm going to give you a courtesy because I really haven't reviewed this in detail enough.
Thank you for your courtesy, yes, and we won't hold you to it in the floor. I'm sorry, what? Oh. Representative Stark?
I'm a no on this.
You're a no. Okay, we'll have that recorded. Any other objections? Seeing none, so moved. And I will close the work session on 895. And we'll need...
Working as fast as I can.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to sign this in full to Senator Steiner Haywood, and on the floor of the Senate, you'll carry the bill.
And on the House, Mr. Chair, Representative Bueller and Representative Davis have both requested. I think Representative Kenny Geyer is also a chief sponsor, so your call, sir, but those folks are all signed on and eager to be
in. I will defer to my co-chair.
Well, I mean, when it comes over to the House, I will.
You've already signed the form that will get you signed on.
I'll defer to my co-chair of the House. We can do it.
And you said the others are already assigned as well.
Well, I mean, nobody's actually officially signed on to it, but they've all signed forms saying that they want to be on and saying that they're interested in helping. So Representative Kenny Geyer is here. Representative Bueller, it doesn't matter, Madam Chair.
It wasn't in the House.
It wasn't in the opposition.
I know.
We're going to recommend Representative Kenny Geyer because he's already on the committee. I'll take the wisdom here next door on that, unless the House has an objection.
That's fine.
Okay. All right, ready? So if I haven't done it before, we're going to close Senate Bill 895. We're going to move to a work session on Senate Bill 606.
Okay. Chair Bates, members of the committee, Senate Bill 606 extends the dental pilot project established in 2011, which permitted OHA to approve, subject to available funding, pilot dental projects that encourage the development of innovative practices in oral health care. With a focus on providing care to populations that evidence-based studies have shown have the highest disease rate and the least access to dental care. It comes to you from the Senate Committee on Health Care. There is a -A3 amendment. You should have that, the staff measure summary and the fiscal impact statement in your package on OLIS. The -A3 amendment requires providers of dental services in a dental pilot project approved by OHA to be eligible for reimbursement for medical assistance if the services are provided to a recipient of medical assistance, and it also appropriates $100,000 general fund to the Oregon Health Authority.
Thank you, Kim.
Mr. Chair, I move the -A3 amendment into Senate Bill 606.
Representative Nathanson has moved the -A3 amendments into Senate Bill 606. Any objections? Seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. This may be one of our most important things that we're passing. We sometimes fail to forget that the dental part, the part of our mouth that actually assist in the digestion and other parts of our system is extremely important. And when we look at also from the standpoint of assuring that people can get employment and all that, and I just think sometimes we overlook how important the dental piece in our system is. And I just will just let you know.
I couldn't agree more. As a physician, I often forget that a lot of times people's horrible infections that affect their heart and lungs and kidneys come from the teeth.
Yes.
And then we just overlook that. I agree. Any other comments?
You think I was a duck, huh?
Yeah.
I have a
pretty good one.
Final motion.
Yes.
I move Senate Bill 606 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Representative Nathanson moves Senate Bill 606 to the full committee with due pass recommendation as amended. No objections, so moved. We'll close a work session on Senate Bill 606, and we'll open a work session.
Oh, we need carriers.
Oops. Carriers in the House. The Senate will be carried by Mons Anderson, mm-hmm. Senator Mons Anderson.
And then the House, Representative Kenny Geyer, please.
Senator Winters, would you like
I'll
to carry
it in full?
Senator Winters will take it in full. Can we do the next one too?
Yes.
I'll be opening work session on Senate Bill 660.
Okay, Dr. Bates, members of the committee, Senate Bill 660 directs the Oregon Health Authority to screen and ensure the provision of dental sealants to student populations who attend an elementary school or middle school in which at least 40% of the students are eligible to receive assistance under the USDA National Lunch Program. In addition, the bill directs OHA to develop a plan for transitioning schools served directly by OHA to receiving the services from the local dental sealant programs. OHA is required to assist schools in making this transition, as well as to establish by rule procedures and qualifications for certification, recertification, and oversight for the local dental sealant programs to ensure quality services are being provided. This bill comes to you from the Senate Committee on Health Care. There is a -A4 amendment. That amendment, the staff measure summary, and the fiscal impact are attached to this memo on OLIS. The -A4 simply appropriates $200,000 general fund to the Oregon Health Authority. If this bill passes, OHA will use existing staff and resources to expand the current statewide school-based dental sealant program to include eligible schools not yet serviced, and then it will use the fund to establish a program to help school transition into using the local sealant program and then take on more students with its available resources.
Thank you, Kim.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash A4 amendment into Senate Bill 660.
Representative Nathanson has moved the Dash A4 amendment into Senate Bill 660. Any objections? Seeing none, so moved. Just a quick comment on this. We had a very elegant discussion of this bill by the medical director, the dental director from MOTA. She was here, and I cannot pronounce her name, but she really knows what she's talking about, and so I'm not going to ruin that. The key issues for her and for us, I believe, are one, that the dental sealants be done carefully and appropriately, and that doing them in an inappropriate fashion makes them ineffective, but this is a very effective way of preventing dental disease, and that, and this is the message for OHA, that the information about who has received sealants and who has not received sealants has to be shared so they're not doubling down and doing kids twice that ought to be done. That was the two things she really asked for that made absolute sense to me. And so this money is to get a better communication system going as well as assuring the quality of those sealants. And if that's accomplished, will be a big step forward for a lot of kids in our state who can avoid caries and dental disease in kindergarten and in the fifth grade when those sealants are done as their mature teeth come in. So I'll stop there and take the next motion.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 660 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Representative Nathanson has moved Senate Bill 660 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation as amended. Objections?
No discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is just a little bit of question about the exact language in the bill. And in the event that it appears in bill drafting, a word or two were omitted to make it perfectly clear, I assume this can be either fixed as just sort of the editorial routine that happens, or we can take care of it in the 2016 session if there really was a technical problem. But it's not related really to the intent of the bill or how it operates.
All right, thank you for that. And I think we know the intent and spirit of the bill. If there's a minor issue on it, we can look at, as you said, in 16, and get it on the record of the floor if you want to also as it goes through. Will that be acceptable to you?
Yes, thank you.
Any objections to the bill? Seeing none, so moved. Close the work session on Senate Bill 660. Open a work session. I keep forgetting that for some reason. You want to carry it?
I'll carry it.
Thank you. And Senator Mons Anderson has been very involved in these discussions on dental care. Can we have her carry the floor?
Sure.
So we'll have on the Senate floor will be Senator Mons Anderson, and on the House. I think you have a dentist in your house, don't you?
I'm trying to get Representative Stark's attention. I'd like to assign it to Representative Hayden, pending his agreement.
Okay.
Be willing to do that?
I'm going to get the work session closed. Mm-hmm. I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 900. Kim?
Okay. Senate Bill 900 requires the Oregon Health Authority to post on its website at least annually health care information to empower consumers to make economically sound and medically appropriate decisions. It comes to you from the Senate Committee on Health Care. There is a Dash A4 amendment. That amendment, the staff measure summary and the fiscal impact is attached to this memo on OLIS. There is the Dash A4 amendment. Just clarifies that information that OHA is required to post should originate only from data collected from insurers or fraternal benefit society and third-party administrators. The Dash A4 does not change the fiscal determination. And the Dash A4 also appropriates $238.276 in general fund for the 2015-17 biennium for the Oregon Health Authority to carry out the provisions of this bill.
Thank you, Kim.
Mr. Chair, I move Dash A4 amendment into the Senate Bill 900.
Representative Nathanson has moved the Dash A4 amendments to Senate Bill 900. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. I appreciate the intent of the Hospital Association and their proponents of 900 with this, and I, as you know, feel very strongly about the need to increase healthcare price transparency so people can make, consumers can play an active role in controlling healthcare costs by making thoughtful choices. I remain dubious that the plan proposed in 900, and I've had this conversation with the Hospital Association, so I don't think I'm saying anything that surprises them, or I hope I'm not. I remain dubious that this will actually do it. I think averages and ranges don't help a whole lot. I think it's going to be hard to determine exactly what's included in a given package, and I'm a little unclear as to why the state needs to foot the bill for this one. So I'm not... Are you? I'm a no, actually, on this one.
So I take it you're not going to carry the floor, then?
No, sir, I'm not.
I'm actually in favor of this bill, and if we get more granular someday with this and start talking about the patient mix, the payer mix of hospitals, I like, then I will get down to those levels. Some hospitals have a lot of Medicare and Medicaid, especially in rural parts of the state. Some part hospitals, by pure luck, have been located in areas where there's lots of commercial payers and low Medicaid and Medicare, they can lower their rates. So when we get to that granularity, I'll be looking for more. But this is the first, I believe, a first good step in the right direction. And but I also share your feelings that this is not going as far as we'd like. I think in time we'll get there.
Question, Mr. Chair, is both the insurers and the hospitals are actually okay with the bill?
I believe so. It's a consensus bill, as far as I know.
Yeah, and it is a first step.
And Mr. Chair, I reserve the right to change my mind in the other direction if I learn some more stuff between now and then. But for the moment, I'm going to express a token no on this one.
I understand, and
thank
I appreciate that. It's a thoughtful all parts. Any other questions? Any other discussion? And so you're a no. Okay, whatever token no is, you're a token no.
I'm a no.
So A4s are so moved.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 900 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Representative Nason moves Senate Bill 900 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation as amended. Any objections? One noted. No others? So moved. We'll close this work session, Senate Bill 900, and we will get... carriers. You got me trained now.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, the first senator listed as a chief sponsor on the bill is Senator Cruz.
I'll take it to the floor and give Cruz on that.
That sounds fine.
On the floor.
So.
And the first representative listed on the bill as a chief sponsor is Representative Lively.
Okay.
So I would recommend Lively for that.
That'd be fine.
Mr. Chair, could we stand at ease for just a moment?
Yes.
What's that left? 695, 28.
Eric, are we back on now?
That's him on the House floor.
Okay, we're back in session. We're going to hold over House Bill 2522 while Representative Olson and Representative Kenny Geyer have a good look at that and bring it back to us tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. And have a discussion about it. I consider you guys the odd couple, you know. Just so you know, I'm glad to see you united at one time. You're working
Please.
Together. So bring it back tomorrow, and with a good, if you could talk to your chair between now and then, it'd be really helpful. Okay, and she can indicate to me what she wants to do with the bill. And we're going to hold over 2642 because we have apparently an amendment coming from potentially from the Speaker's office. So we'll run those bills tomorrow. And so those two bills will be held over. I will now open a work session on Senate Bill 695.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, Senate Bill 695 allows the Oregon Health Authority to continue to contract with prepaid managed care health services organizations, including dental care organizations. The original bill directs OHA to study the effectiveness of dental care organizations and includes a general fund appropriation for that work. However, the proposed #A2 amendment deletes the requirement for that study and also deletes the general fund appropriation.
Mr. Chair, I move the A2 amendment to Senate Bill 695.
Representative Nathan moves the A2 amendment to Senate Bill 695. Discussion?
Just a question. So we're going to study, but we're not going to give them dollars to do so.
I would say that if they decide to do the study, they have a $19.5 billion budget. Okay. They can squeeze out $150,000.
Okay. I'm just asking the question.
Thank you.
I want to make certain that things go forward, and so.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The main part of the bill is the key. We want to get that through. Any objections?
This one.
Seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 695 to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with the due pass recommendation as amended.
Senator Nathan moves Senate Bill 695 to the Joint Ways and Means Committee with the due pass recommendation as amended. Any discussion? Any opposition? Seeing none, so moved. Carriers.
Let me take dinner in full.
Would you? Thank you. And I'll probably carry this one to the floor since I know the problem better than anybody else does. Is that okay with you?
Sure.
Okay.
Hey.
So,
let's ask
Senator
Hayden in the House if he would be willing to.
Senator Winters in full, and I'll take it on the floor of the Senate. Okay. Close the work session, Senate Bill 695. Thank you, by the way. And we will open a public hearing.
No. Work session on 2828?
Just a work session.
Oh, we haven't finished 2820. Right. I'm sorry. Work session on Senate Bill, House Bill 2828.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, House Bill 2828 extends the sunset date of provisions that require the health authority to contract with a third party to conduct a study to examine options for financing health care delivery in Oregon. The bill instructs the agency to accept funding from a variety of sources. And in the original bill, a blank appropriation is included. In the proposed -1 amendment, there's $300,000 general fund that is appropriated to the health authority for the study.
Are you ready for a motion?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move the -1 amendment to House Bill 2828.
Representative Mason moved the -1 amendment to House Bill 2828. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2828 to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Representative Nathan has moved House Bill 2828 to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation as amended. Any objections? Seeing none, so moved. Any carriers?
Mr. Chair, the chief sponsors are Senator Dembro and Representative Smith Warner.
So we'll assign Senator Dembro in the floor.
I'll take it if you want me to, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all.
Okay. That's all.
Okay. And we will return now. I'll close the work session on 2828, and we'll open up a public hearing, a possible work session on House Bill 3396. Hi, Kim.
Hello. All right.
We have two people who want to speak to this bill, Scott Ekblad and Doug Barber.
And Mr. Chair,
would you like to
if I may, I would like to be added to the list of speakers.
Oh. Would you like to go first?
Doesn't matter.
Okay. Scott? And
Co-Chair Bates, Co-Chair Nathanson, and members of the subcommittee. For the record, my name is Scott Ekblad. I'm the director of the Oregon Office of Rural Health. And I prepared testimony yesterday, actually, based on the -813 amendments, and so my testimony will apply to that. There's been quite a bit of discussion around all the various provider incentive programs for the past few sessions, actually. And during the interim between 2013 and 2015 sessions, a couple different groups met to see if we could get more information, figure out which programs were most effective, and see if we can align them a little bit. And the end result was both of the groups actually won that was tasked by the Oregon Health Policy Board with those questions, and one that came together with legislators and various interest groups. Both determined that more information was needed, and more importantly, a thorough analysis of data and ongoing evaluation was needed before we make policy changes involving these provider incentive programs. And so I wanted to point out, as the office that administers all or part of these programs, some of my impressions of the Dash A13 amendments. First of all, with regard to the state income tax credit, if it were to be extended to urban areas, I just wanted to remind folks that that essentially nullifies the original intent of the program. The program is to have a special carrot out there to entice people to go practice in rural communities. And if the carrot also exists in urban, then there's really no longer a carrot for rural. Also wanted to caution folks on the potential revenue impact if it were extended to urban. It's very difficult to determine at this point in time, since one of the directives of the amendments or the bill, if it were amended with the Dash 13s, would be to determine what is considered a medically underserved area in order to get the credit. But if you were to use the commonly accepted federal definition of that, the income tax credit rolls would swell substantially by about 5,000 people. There's currently 2,000 people that currently get the tax credit. Of course, there could be changes made that would reduce that, but it's a possibility. I also want to talk about the fact that House Bill 3396, as amended by the Dash 13s, would eliminate all of the hospital affiliation criteria around eligibility to receive the tax credit. And I just wanted to point out that I do think that's a good idea. I honestly don't know why those hospital affiliation rules are in place. I can only assume there were factors involved back in 1988 when the legislation was first drafted that don't really exist anymore. And right now, they just appear to be very awkward red tape. So I would support that, absolutely. I also wanted to point out that if the State Loan Repayment Program and the State Loan Forgiveness Program, two different programs, were combined into one fund with the ability to shift funds from one program to another based on perceived need, that we have to remember that one program, loan forgiveness in particular, is specifically for rural to benefit rural communities, in that it provides loan forgiveness for those students in rural training tracks of healthcare professional programs. If those funds were combined with another program where the benefits could go to urban, there could be a shift of resources from rural to urban. I just want to express my full support for a study of all the incentive programs. I fully agree with the observation that these programs all came about at different times with different criteria and for different purposes, and that periodic reevaluation is quite appropriate and responsible, and that the Office of Rural Health is eager to assist in any way. I want to make sure, just as much as you do, that the state dollar is being spent as wisely as possible. So thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Scott. Your testimony leads me to believe that we do need to do the study even more than I thought before. And I think it's maybe time to change what your office is designated as, should be designated as, Office of Underserved Communities for rural and urban. And there are minority groups and minority areas, even in Medford, that are underserved. And people actually have to travel a significant distance for people who have limited transportation. We need incentive programs to get people into areas of our area that I know well. I need that. I'm sure there's other areas of the state the same way. I believe there's some in Portland. Hmm. And that's something we need to look at. So the study should bring out that also. We shouldn't just be thinking rural here, but underserved communities, underserved populations. So thank you for your comments. I appreciate that. Mr. Barber? I'm sorry.
Representative.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I cannot find the Dash 13s.
I can't either.
On OLIS.
So, I mean, I was just...
Are we looking at...
I will make sure they're posted. I only posted the 16 and...
We're not going to work the bill today.
Oh, okay.
We're taking a public test. I'm sorry, I should have said that earlier.
It's the 16.
We're doing...
That's recommended. That's why...
We're doing a public hearing today. We'll work it tomorrow. So you have a chance to see it.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Doug Barber here today on behalf of the Oregon Rural Health Association. Just to remind you, the Oregon Rural Health Association includes the Oregon Medical Group, the Oregon Nurses Association, the Hospital Association, the Academy of Family Physicians, physician assistants, dental hygienists, most of the key players in rural healthcare in Oregon. We looked at the A13 amendments on Friday, so we had a little bit of time to look at those. I just saw the A16s this morning. So I think from our perspective, the most important component of this bill is the study. As we testified on Senate Bill 757 before this committee a week or so ago, we think that's key. We agree with the authors of this bill that we want to take a hard look at all of these programs. We want to see what that data shows us so that we can then help work with you to craft a better mechanism to support providers in rural communities. So that piece, we're totally on board. The tax credit is the portion of this bill which changes most dramatically, as I read, between the A13s and the A16s. The A13s would make major changes in the tax credit provision that Scott addressed. The A16s would keep the tax credit in its current form for 2 years, two-year sunset, which is very identical. I mean, I think it's identical language to legislation that is currently in the House Revenue Committee. In about 5 minutes, they're expected to take action on that bill. So we would agree with the A16 version of that, which is let's keep the tax credit as it is for 2 years, come back in 2017, and look at it with all of the other incentive programs to make the whatever changes are necessary. The piece of the bill that we have the most concern with is the overall sunset, which is in the last sections of the bill. I think it's sections 10 through 14 in the A16 version. It's two different sections of the bill. We understand that the goal here is to put pressure on the legislature and providers to come back in 2017 to do something dramatic with these programs. The way this is written, all of the rural health incentive programs, which includes the rural health tax credit, the rural malpractice subsidy program, loan repayment, loan forgiveness, Scholars for a Healthy Oregon at OHSU, all of those programs in the A16s and I think the A13s would sunset in 2018. The challenge, I think, is the message that that sends to rural providers and rural communities. It doesn't say we want to change these programs and make them better, and we're going to do that. It says these programs are going away, and our support for rural providers is going away. We know that, understand that that's not the intent, but I think that's the way it's written, and that's the message I think that they're going to see in this bill. So what we would prefer, we understand that we're coming back in 2017 to make big changes. We would prefer not to have a sunset on these programs so that funding for them would be built into the governor's budget. That funding could then be taken and repurposed for however we all work on in 2017 to come up with a new version of rural provider support in healthcare or underserved community support in healthcare, whatever that looks like. So it's really the only those that overall repeal sunset provision, which gives us some heartburn. Thank you very much.
Representative Nathan is going to come down and speak for a few moments. I'll throw my two bits worth in too. I understand, Mr. Barber, what you said and agree with it to a great degree, but also when we started this discussion 5 months ago, what we got was feedback as follows. One, we don't know which programs work, but we want them all. And then we got back, you can cut his program, but not mine. And if you think you're going to move into this stuff, you're crazy. And we're keeping things the way we are. And, oh, by the way, we can't put together a study and figure out what's going on. It'll take us up to 5, 6, 7 years. We're not going to do that, okay? And I understand your concerns about people in rural Oregon thinking we're abandoning them. I think we can put out a message about that. I think you're quite capable of doing it. Your program is going to say that, too. The goal here is to take somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 million that we're spending right now on these programs as a whole, put them into a single area, a single fund, probably match up a great deal of those with federal funds, which could have us up to $70 to $90 million, and with the discussion of how we get that to providers in rural and urban areas that are served, and really have a program they put enough money into that makes sense and logic. And that study can be done based on information we do have presently and seeing what other states do. Many other states have these programs, and I've had no discussion with anybody saying, what's Nebraska doing? What's California doing? What's Wyoming doing? We can put that together by 17, probably by February of 16, and move this stuff. I would think that if we get the message out to the rural Oregon areas and to underserved areas, that we are not just dropping programs. We want to enhance the right programs, that we should be okay. But I kind of like that sword hanging over everybody's head. You will come to the table and have a conversation with us, and I keep pushing this off. So a difference of opinion there about how we should move it forward. I think your points are well taken, though. I don't want them to think that we're abandoning them.
Dr. Bates, I guess I'm thinking to myself, hearing what Scott and Doug both said, and as I get in, I understand clearly what's going on for wanting to pull everybody together. But if I'm a brand new doctor and I'm wanting to settle in someplace over in Eastern Oregon in a rural community, and all of a sudden I'm seeing this bill, I got to think maybe I don't want to go there.
I understand.
So I understand. It's a pickle.
It's a pickle. Representative Nathan, would you join us here? And
while she's settling in, can I just make a quick statement?
Yeah.
Thank you. I tend to agree with what Doug just said, too. I know in just my little corner of Oregon how difficult it is to attract and retain medical professionals. And one of the biggest draws is these programs and their... that when people are asked what is it hinging on, and also the other one is the spouse opportunities, etc. But it's those programs, those loan repayment programs, the rural Stepford Rural Docs, because they're making a bit of a sacrifice, although I don't see it that way. I think it's a little piece of paradise and it's worth the sacrifices to live where I live. But I am very concerned about that too, and the message that it sends. So I hear both sides of it, and I get that, but I don't want to jeopardize these programs at all. And it also makes us rely on another legislature a few years ahead, and some of us might be here, some of us might not be, and we don't know who's coming in and whose opinions will be where.
I hope that's not directed at me.
No.
I'm not here next time around, something really bad is happening.
No, I know. I don't mean that, but just life happens, you know.
Just kidding.
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to hold off until after Representative Nathanson speaks.
Senator Winters?
I just have a question of Doug, and that is because I happen to share your concern, and I happen to also understand that sometimes pressure has to be created in order for people to respond and act reasonably. So what do you, and talking to your organizations, do they believe is a reasonable time?
Co-Chair Senator Winter, we agree with the study provision that we need to do that work quickly, or have that work done quickly, and come back in the 2017 session prepared to take a hard look at restructuring these programs. So we think 2017 is the appropriate date, and that is what is in this study bill and also in 757, I think.
So you think that's fine. You just want to make certain that the dollars are there?
We want to make sure that, I'm sorry, Co-Chair Sunder, we want to make sure that in the 2017 budgets, as they move forward, the dollars are there. And we want to make sure that rural providers who are thinking about going to a community in rural Oregon understand that the goal here is not to abolish these programs in 2018. The goal here is to restructure these programs in 2017.
Well, you know as well as I do, we cannot actually legislate against future sessions on our budget against future sessions. So that's a given going forward. So if the language in the bill contains that assurance that it is the intent of the language that you're talking about, and then I know I'm going to hear the good representative, because I know her intent of getting things streamlined and more efficient.
And co-chairs, Senator Winters, all of these programs, loan repayment, loan forgiveness, malpractice subsidy, are all on sort of a rolling two-year appropriation.
Right.
And rural providers understand that. The only program in this mix that actually has a sunset currently is the Rural Health Tax Credit. Historically, that has been a six-year sunset. We had a two-year sunset, now we're proposing another two-year sunset. So that one has shrunk down. But again, it's been a rolling sunset. So we understand we're not looking for 10-year funding. We're just looking for, but this is different to say all these programs end in 2018. That's a different message, we believe.
Representative Nate, I'm sorry.
I guess I'm a little bit perplexed because your job also is to instruct and communicate with your members. And if the members understand that this process that we're using is also to try to bring everything together to try to figure out what works and what is the best strategy or the best policy that this body should be making going forward in the future, because that's how I read the legislation. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm missing something, but that's the intent of bringing it all together in order really to try to enhance what we're doing so that we can get more physicians and healthcare into the rural communities. I think I read it right.
Senator Winters, you've expressed it better than I did, and I appreciate your comments. You know also that we have understanding with CMS that we can match this money under certain conditions and get more money out to these programs, that we're going to ask for that to be put in the waiver that's being prepared with CMS in August, and showing that we're making a movement here at the local level to get that waiver in place and get that money potentially matched or parts of it matched. It's extremely important. Our match rate right now is over 60%. The amount of money we could put into underserved areas is significant, and I understand the fears everybody has about this, but we should also look on the other side of, if we put a good program together and we really have a program that works, that we potentially could have a lot more money to help those programs. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. And for the recording, I'm Nancy Nathanson, State Representative from House District 13. First, I'm going to make just a couple of brief responses to some committee statements before I give the testimony that I had planned. One of the comments was that in rural areas, a big draw is these programs, as Representative Boone had pointed out. It is a big draw to have incentives. We just don't know if these incentives make a difference or if other incentives might work better. And I'm going to speak to a few of those options of things that might work better. One of the things that I would point out is that in a letter that was delivered to the House Committee on Health Care from an organization that's been studying the tax credit, points out that the tax credit was first created in 1989 and later expanded, yet we are still hearing about problems attracting an adequate number of providers to rural medical practices. Quote, after nearly 25 years, the persistence of the same problem suggests the credit is not the proper tool to increase the medical provider workforce in rural areas, end quote. In other words, there may be other things that would work just as well or better that would be attractive. If this one isn't moving the dial, maybe something else might after 25 years, if the problem is still as dire as it always has been. Another comment was about you can't guarantee dollars for future legislatures. That's absolutely true in this bill because it's directing a group to make recommendations on all the incentives. I think the legislative intent is obvious, that it is our intent to have incentives because we're asking someone to recommend which ones work best and how should they be handled. So I think the legislative intent is clear. Nonetheless, I do know that another amendment has been prepared, and if the co-chair, our chair today, Senator Bates, would like to talk about it later, that would be fine, but I know another amendment has been prepared to make it abundantly clear that the intent is to continue with incentive programs. There is, though, speaking to the point of you can't guarantee anything, the legislature adopted an incentive program several years ago, and Legislative Fiscal Office actually did quite a bit of research on all of the incentive programs and pointed out to me that one of them hasn't been funded. It's still funded at $0. So that's an example of one that's on the books and not funded. So you just can't guarantee, but you know, what a future legislature will do. Oregon allocates over $30 million each biennium to various programs to help recruit and retain healthcare providers, particularly in rural or underserved areas, or specifically targeted in primary care. The programs, as you've heard, use tax credits, loan repayment, loan forgiveness, and insurance subsidies and incentives to either students or professionals to locate or stay in Oregon. Another $14.5 million comes to Oregon students and professionals from the federal government. Each of the programs has a slightly different criteria in defining rural or underserved area or listing which professionals are included in primary care. We are spending a lot of money and adding the state money and the federal money. That's about $45 million a biennium, and we don't know the effectiveness or the relative effectiveness of different programs. Here's a quick summary of those incentives. 7 are using state dollars, 5 are using federal dollars. For students, about 400 students are getting help through state and federal programs, including loan forgiveness. For practitioners, about 2,400 are getting a tax credit, about 300 are benefiting from loan repayment, and 655 are getting an insurance subsidy. But those, you don't add those numbers together because some persons may be receiving 2 or 3 of those incentives. In other words, there's overlap. The incentive programs were all developed with a central theme to bring healthcare to underserved and rural areas. You've heard about the healthcare shortage. I'm not going to repeat all of that. However, once money is allocated to each of these individual programs, there is no flexibility to respond to changing needs in the marketplace of students or communities that need help attracting healthcare practitioners. You can't move money around from one program to another. So one of the points that I think should be considered is an overall fund for incentives over which a professional or responsible group can oversight body can take a look at it and be able to say, you know, this year we need more money in this area, or we anticipate the shortage of this type of practitioner versus that one. We've sort of solved the problem for a while in this area. We want to spend a little more money in another area instead, whether it's a geographic area or an area of type of professional. I think we need to have that kind of flexibility available for people who are really studying this all the time and not leave it up to the legislature to do the one-off allocations that we've seen in the past, where one bill might go to an education committee because it mentions the word student, and another bill might go to a healthcare committee because it talks about primary care. So the bills go through different policy committees, and they go through different ways and means subcommittees, and there isn't currently any overall oversight of the programs and how they work together as a package. With the -A16 amendment that's available, what the bill does is it establishes an umbrella fund that can be comprehensively managed by an appropriate body, but that would become effective only in 2018. There's a delayed implementation to that, again, to give time for a study to be looking at all of this. So it, it away. It's putting a marker in, saying this fund will be in effect, but at a future date. It directs the Oregon Health Authority to do a study on effectiveness of the incentive programs. It directs the Oregon Health Policy Board to review various ideas and make recommendations to the legislature. For example, to look at residency programs. You've heard from several other representatives about that. Whether there's a way to attract federal matching dollars, as Senator Bates has pointed out. Why shouldn't students at private schools as well as public schools benefit from some help with their loans or scholarships? Right now we have a very effective program, but it's available to students only at one university. It's a public university, and there's thought that, well, we have a couple other schools in Oregon who are doing really good work in training primary care professionals. Should there be help available for students there as well? Perhaps direct subsidies for Medicare services or direct bonuses would be an effective incentive. So those are just some of the ideas that are mentioned in the bill that's proposed to you. And finally, as was mentioned by other speakers, it does put a sunset on the current incentive programs with plenty of time for the legislature to modify them or remove the sunset or consider other programs that have been recommended. I think the rest of the bill is very clear that the legislature is interested in incentive programs. That's why we're asking for recommendations. So what you have in front of you, I acknowledge it's rocking the boat, but the point isn't to sink it. It's to get that boat sailing faster and to get some good results in rural areas. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I would say, if nothing else, we've got everybody's attention now, and we're going to move something forward. Representative Boone.
Well, I think Senator
Steiner Haywood. Make up your mind, Bates.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I want to thank Representative Nathanson for her extraordinary amount of work on this, both in the interim and during the session, and for her thoughtful conversations that we've had over the past couple of weeks about this. I really am very grateful to you and admire your work on this, because it's very significant and important. Second of all, I want to emphasize a couple of the points that she made with regard to the training program issues. We know, for example, that we have an insufficient number of training programs for family medicine and for certain other kinds of critical specialties in both medicine and mental health programs, I would say in particular. And we are limited by how graduate medical education is funded by the federal government, but there's nothing that says the state can't invest in residency training programs for physicians or other kinds of postgraduate training programs or graduate training programs for mental health professionals. Which brings me to my third point, which is, yes, we have to talk about rural providers, but to be honest, Mr. Chair, now that almost every Oregonian has health insurance, we have a healthcare workforce shortage in every single part of this state. We have waiting periods for routine care for people with commercial insurance now. That is because we just do not have it. As our population ages, it's going to be even worse. We also know that without a sufficient supply of a wide range of mental health providers, we're not going to be able to address a lot of our health care issues, and we have to be thinking about that issue as part of this whole restructuring. So specifics of the Dash A16s, I think overall it looks pretty good at this point. And we can argue about specifics about sunsets or how it's structured, but in essence, I agree with the intent of this. I also would want to put on the record that I think we have to look seriously at bills that are currently also under consideration. I think they're in the Ways and Means Sub on Education regarding residency training programs and ways to fund those. And that brings exactly Representative Nathanson's point to the forefront, which is that these important bills that all are really addressing the same issue are in multiple different committees, and we have to take a look at this as a legislature. If we want to keep Oregon healthy, if we want to control rising health care costs, the only way we're going to be able to do this is take a comprehensive look at health care workforce broadly construed across the state and all the different mechanisms that we have potentially available to increase it. So thank you, Representative Nathanson, for your hard work on this, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to add that comment.
Thank you for your comments. Representative Boone?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I have a question for you, Scott. Doesn't your shop already keep a lot of this data as to how many people are using the opportunities that are available and where they are located?
Co-Chair Bates, Representative Boone, we do have a lot of raw data. It's really the analysis of that data that's missing. In other words, we can tell you who's where and who's benefited and actually who got loan repayment 10 years ago and is still serving a rural community, but we can't really do the analysis. We don't have enough information to do the analysis of which one would be a better bang for your buck.
Senator Winters. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I need to make this statement because there's been this conversation. I do want to commend Representative Nathanson, and I know how thorough she is, and I know that her work is to make things more efficient and make certain that we are getting the best that we can get. And having said that, I would hate to see us, however, talking in a much broader context than beyond the issue of rural health. And I say that because we've done a lot of reforms and changes in the healthcare system in Oregon. I would be the first to say that it would be wonderful if we had access and everything's in place in the entire part of our state. That's an ideal. And having said that, I don't want to, this legislator don't want to continue neglecting the rural parts of our state, whether it is talking about our healthcare system, whether it's talking about workforce and some of those other pieces. I've heard this conversation so much in the building that everything that we do tends to either go up the I-5 corridor or up north, while the rural parts of our community are really struggling with staying viable. So, for me, I like what's done in this building. Thank you, Nancy, in this particular bill. But I think to talk, and that's not to mean that we should not be focusing, but I think on this particular piece of legislation and this effort, I would like to see us stay true to the needs of rural Oregon, and that's me personally, because I really think that if we don't get busy, and I'm talking to all of us now that have something to do with policy, if we don't get busy and start building the divide in our state, I don't like to see us moving towards two Oregons. So that's my little 2 cents worth for what it's worth.
Thank you for your comments. I'll make a couple of quick comments and get us out of here. And a couple of comments are going to be supportive of what Representative Nathanson is trying to do here. The malpractice subsidy was put together with a work group that I worked on 10 years ago when malpractice was a crisis in the state. That crisis has passed. We've done things and things have changed in the malpractice world where that is not a big a thing anymore, and we need to look at that again. And that's what this bill will do. Loan repayments. We don't know if they really work or not. I've talked to some rural hospitals, and they say a doctor or nurse practitioner comes for 3 or 4 years, repays a loan, leaves immediately. They need more than 3 or 4 years for them. We know that where a physician or a nurse practitioner practices is more considered by their residency training than their medical school training. And so residencies in rural parts of Oregon might be very effective for us. We also would want a commitment for anybody doing a residency there that's a long commitment, maybe 10 years. And residencies are actually getting hard to get right now. We have more people coming out of medical school than we have residencies. And without enough residencies, those doctors cannot get a medical license to practice. They're going to come out with a huge debt. They'll have a medical degree, but they can't get a license to practice because there's not enough residencies in the United States right now. So that's an issue for us, too, that gives us an opportunity for rural Oregon. I would tell you, my personal practice, we are now probably 6 to 8 weeks out getting new patients in. And the problem is I've spent too much time in Salem. So I want to go home, okay? All that said, I think you're doing the right thing here. And the Dash 17s, which were proposed by my office and Mr. Bellick helped us with, I want to read those real quickly because I think they're pertinent here if these are accepted tomorrow. And really, they're a whereas type of situation explaining the bill. Whereas the state of Oregon spends approximately $30 million each year on various incentive programs for medical professionals, and whereas the incentive programs are effective, but it is unclear whether the programs produce the best results for the tax dollars spent on the programs, and whereas taxpayers deserve to have confidence that their tax dollars are being spent in the most thoughtful way possible, and whereas Oregonians and medical professionals in rural and medically underserved areas need assurance that critical health care programs will not be shut down without effective programs to replace them. And whereas this 2015 Act is intended to initiate a close look at how tax dollars are spent to ensure that taxpayers enjoy the best value possible, and whereas this 2015 Act is not intended to allow for incentive programs to be shut down before the programs can be retooled or replaced with more effective programs, now therefore. You need to get that message out to people. When you have rural health associations, they can hear this language if we put it in the bill and understand what we're trying to do. And I think most people would understand that if you know the complexity of our programs, the lack of knowledge about them. Scott, I think you said it all. I can tell you who's got the credits, who's got the loan repayment. I can't tell you who stuck around. I can't tell you which one's left. We just don't know. And Representative Nathan, your bill does that for us. And so I'm going to, unless there's further comments, close a public hearing on this bill. I ask you all to look at the amendments that have been proposed very carefully, because we plan to move this bill tomorrow. Okay. Close a public hearing on 3396. Thank you all for your time and your hard work. Tomorrow, I believe, will be our last meeting unless the co-chairs call us back for some special work. And I will look forward to seeing you all here tomorrow morning, as usual, at 8:30. And we are adjourned. Thank you.